This episode is brought to you by Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay. You didn't start a business to spend your Sundays chasing invoices and manual data entry. But as you grow, accounts payable starts to feel like a full-time job you never applied for. Bills pile up, approvals get lost in email, and your vendors are constantly asking, "Where's my check?" It's distracting, it's stressful, and it's keeping you from the work that actually moves the needle. Intuit QuickBooks Bill Pay is the exit ramp. QuickBooks Bill Pay automates the busy work that eats your calendar by bringing every bill, every vendor, and every payment into one organized dashboard. Stop chasing details and start seeing the big picture. Know exactly what's due, who needs to sign off, and how it impacts your cash flow before the money leaves your bank. Vendors can even manage their own details so you stay in control of how and when you pay. Grow with confidence and put your AP on autopilot in QuickBooks. Learn more at QuickBooks.com/BillPay. Again, that's QuickBooks.com/BillPay. Terms apply. Money movement services are provided by Intuit Payments, Inc., licensed as a money transmitter by the New York State Department of Financial Services.
Welcome to Texans on Tap. I'm Brandon Strange alongside Charlie Pololo and Josh Jordan. Go follow them on X at Pololo and at Josh Jordan SCS. Charlie, Josh, welcome in. This is normally the time when we preview this week's game, and sadly there won't be one. As I said in Sunday's post game, as bitter as the result of the divisional round game was, I don't want to be a prisoner of the moment, not appreciate what a fun and unpredictable season it turned out to be. Texas won 10 straight games before being eliminated by New England, but they were eliminated. And for a team carrying one of the most elite defenses in the NFL, getting bounced in the second round did not exactly live up to fan and team expectations. So now's that time of the year when we get the introspection and the reflecting and the meeting with the media. So part of that was Caserio's postmortem of the season with the media. He did that presser on Wednesday. He did about 42 minutes of vague word salad. Obviously, the main topic that people wanted to know about was CJ, and they asked about helping him to develop and make improvement. And he deflected on the topic, said it's not about one person, that their loss on Sunday was a result of not executing on both sides of the ball. I mean, we said that as well, but it's not the defensive players who got turned into viral memes. It was CJ Stroud. If you guys put truth serum in Caserio, or if we all put truth serum in Caserio, first of all, he'd probably sound like a different person. But if we did somehow, what do you think his concern level is for such a high draft pick in year three to perform the way he did in back-to-back games in the playoffs?
I think he would say, truthfully, hopeful, but concerned, because they were such bad performances. Now, there are all-time great quarterbacks who've laid eggs in playoff games. I remember Tom Brady once getting past Baltimore in an AFC championship game, and he's interviewed on the field, mic'd to the whole stadium, and Brady said, "Well, we're going to another Super Bowl, even though today I pretty much sucked." I mean, it can happen. Brett Favre had 6 interceptions in a playoff game. Peyton Manning had a 5-turnover playoff game. Problem is, C.J. Stroud's not Brett Favre, Peyton Manning, Tom Brady. What is his peak level of ascendancy? And there are questions. Certainly, the blowback, the fan reaction, is that C.J. Stroud is now useless. Go with Davis Mills or anyone besides C.J. Stroud. Not to crush the dreams and hopes of those who feel that way, but there is zero possibility of the Texans doing anything but exercising C.J. Stroud's fifth-year option. Right, he'll be going into his fourth year. It's still barely over $11 million on the cap, a bargain basement starting quarterback. That number will jump to about $25 million for year five. And then the big question, how engaging do the Texans want to be with C.J. Stroud? This is the offseason for extensions, typically for high first-round draft choices after season three. As an aside, the agent for C.J. Stroud, David Mulligheta, who did the Deshaun Watson contract with the Texans. On the other hand, Mulligheta is also Derek Stingley's guy, so it's not as if, they can't work with this guy. Look, you just hope that this was the nadir for C.J. Stroud. And like it used to be in the NBA, you had to experience devastating defeat before you could finally get to the mountaintop, the Chicago Bulls for years before they got there, the Detroit Pistons. But if you're not at least somewhat concerned, your head is either stuck in the ground or lodged up another part of your anatomy. There are questions about his level of play for 2 years now. Obviously, nothing nearly as bad as the 2 playoff performances. But Troy Aikman and Kurt Warner are two rather qualified ex-NFL quarterbacks who've been fairly withering and honest, and I think accurate, in their assessment of where C.J. Stroud is and going forward. The absolute worst case scenario is that C.J. Stroud's performance against the Patriots was Brad Lidge to Albert Pujols, after which there was just no way Brad Lidge was ever going to be viable as the Astros closer. The next season, he was no good and gone. C.J. Stroud's going to have an ample runway for redemption, but there is going to be that elephant in the room, that skepticism, no matter what he does in the regular season. Okay, what's playoff C.J. going to look like?
I wonder if he's able to be honest with himself, because every time he's asked about the offense, he's like, oh, what are you talking about? It's a good team, and he deflects there. And then it's about, oh, well, you know, it's not that bad. Well, you don't have a top half of the league offense. They ignore everything. Remember last year, what are you going to do about the offensive line? Oh, you don't have to worry about the offensive line, okay? We're going to draft one guy. And they did. And Ursary turned out to be okay. But that didn't fix the problem. I think he has a hard time looking in the mirror at what's wrong with the team. They finally addressed wide receiver this year or this past draft, but those guys weren't really ready. You know, he talked up Jalen Knoll. He hardly played, hardly got on the field. And then he really talked up Xavier Hutchinson, that he's the most improved player and such a great option. Like, he got 13 targets in that game. Why aren't you throwing the ball to Christian Kirk? Hutchinson couldn't get open last season when it was him and Mechie, and you realized you needed a problem. So I just wonder if he's really honest with himself or with any of us. The problem is if he can't recognize there's an issue with the offense, that they're not even average, how are they going to fix it? That's a huge question mark for me.
He's not dumb. I mean, he can't think they have a really good offense. You could point to, well, they wound up 13th in the league in scoring. In a league where you play 17 games, as we talked about on other fronts, as opposed to 82 in the NBA, 162 in Major League Baseball, take out battering the helpless at the time, Baltimore Ravens, 44 points. And then the blowout they put on a crapola Arizona team late in the season. And they weren't the 13th best offense. Oh, by the way, they scored 4 defensive touchdowns. How many times did they manage to get, well, 3 points out of it because the defense set them up with a ball in opposing territory? No legitimate overview of the Texans offense would say they had a good offense in 2025. Nick also highly extolled the virtues of their offensive line coaching. So if the personnel is great and the positional coaching was great, what does that mean about the offensive coordinator, other than that he's expected to be back?
If this offense is good, could I interest anybody? How many games this year, including the playoffs, do you think C.J. Stroud threw for 300 yards in? 1. When you think of good offenses across the league, do you think a quarterback's can only throw for 300 yards 1 time the entire season? That was against a 49ers team that half of them were all injured. That was one of the most banged up San Francisco rosters you're ever going to see. So I don't see it. I think there's still that level of, I don't know if it's denial, if it's arrogance, or a little bit of both, but I'm seriously concerned.
It was a great field goal kicking offense.
You got to get close enough to kick field goals, though. One of the tweets that I noticed following the game was one person tweeted, well, you can't look at how guys like Darnold and Baker Mayfield have come back from low lows and rehabilitated their career. Like, you can't look at that and give up on C.J. Stroud. And my friend Sean retweeted that and said, well, key distinction if you're a Texans fan is the quarterbacks you named all had to go somewhere else and have a change of scenery before they were able to rehab their career. So, yeah, I mean, that gets back to your point, Charlie, is just you wonder about that Lidge effect. Does the noise become so overwhelming in Houston? You've got Davis Mills, who we've already seen what Davis Mills is, sitting on the bench, but you got people clamoring for Davis Mills to come in and save that game. That does not bode well for your top 2 drafted quarterback, who now you're in the third year and you've got major questions about his performance. And I want to dig into Nick Caley a little bit more from this presser, but first a word from our sponsor, Alvin Equipment.
Yes, about 75 years as a third generation family-owned business, conveniently enough, in Alvin, right on Highway 6. The oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. Dependable quality, and whatever product you're looking for. You want quality and dependability, reliability. Alvin Equipment offers it all, whether it's a tractor, zero-turn mower, anything they offer, excavators, compact track loaders, Alvin equipment with Kubota products in stock with low-rate financing available as well. Their website is their name, alvinequipment.com. You can call 281-331-3177, 281-331-3177. That's Alvin Equipment, and mention you heard about them on Texans on Tap.
Awesome. Thank you to Alvin Equipment. Make sure, guys, you support the people who support our show. They're supporting local independent media, so give them your business. Getting back to the offense, I was amused when Caserio was asked about whether he had done enough to help the offense to develop. And he said, well, we were one of the best teams in the league, so not sure what the question was. And then the person followed up and said, well, statistically, the offense didn't make much improvement year over year, to which Casera replied, well, wins are the most important statistic. And then the reporter followed up again, like, but you lost in the divisional round again, and I assume you guys want to get farther. And Casera said, well, we're good enough to beat any team. We just didn't execute and turned over the ball. And protecting the ball is the single most important statistic correlated to winning. Look it up. Dude, look it up. You cannot sound more like a D-bag than saying look it up to someone when you're having a disagreement with them. You know, he was asked about, in regards to the offense, Nick Caley's return. Would he be back? Another question about Caley was if Casera felt vindicated with the change of Slowick to Caley, which that really felt like a trap question. But he said Caley got better as the year went along and he would anticipate he'll be back. So look, I do agree with Casera from the standpoint they didn't execute. But how much of that lack of execution falls on Caley, and how much of it's just asking a first-time play caller to work with a hand tied behind his back when you got a patchwork line and your RB1 missing the entire season?
And also notice they never even mentioned the Steelers game where Stroud was completely terrible in that game too. And that it was 7-6 going to the fourth quarter. The defense saved your bacon. And then CJ can kind of front run when things are going well, but when the chips are down, that is not the dude. He's just not. And we talk about the Brad Lidge effect. It was, how could you think he was going to come back after not being able to catch a snap? And then all of a sudden be good to go between the ears. And then he comes out and, I mean, there could have been 7 interceptions in that first half. Even the completions, receivers were having to go down to the ground just to catch him. But as far as we go with Caley, what are you doing? All year long, we saw get the play in. They're burning timeouts because they're not getting to the line. They don't know what to do. CJ doesn't have enough time to check. We saw that happen in the Patriots game where you're burning timeouts because you can't get lined up quickly enough. And then you get cute. You got Togiai in the backfield, and then that basically wipes a touchdown off the board. Like, you can't even get your starters you've been working with since training camp to line up correctly and know what the hell they're doing, and now we're going to bring defensive players in. And twice you had penalties when that happened, when we brought Togiai in, once in that game, one in another game. So I just, what are you doing? I feel like they get too cute. They feel like they know better than everybody else. And I think I remember hearing some audio from CJ that first time they used Togiai on the missed snap that Woody Marks scored on, him talking about how they walked through that in practice. So you're bringing in guys that aren't even offensive players, and you're not doing enough reps. Do they know what they're doing? And all year long, you saw Higgins and Noel not really knowing where to line up. I'm not impressed at all with Caley. Of course he got better. He's never called plays before. You would think after 18 games or whatever it was, he'd be better than when he started. My whole deal is I'm just praying that ownership steps in here, because remember, Gary Kubiak, he failed for a couple of years with defensive coordinators that didn't have any experience. And finally, Mr. McNair stepped in and said, hey, Wade Phillips is available. We're hiring him. Because he's actually done this before. And look what happened that year. The Texans had one of the best defenses in the year, and it made a huge difference. So I think the only way you're going to get any kind of significant change at coordinator, once again, I think the McNairs are going to have to step in. Either that or maybe D'Amico. I trust D'Amico more than Caserio, that he'll be real with himself.
I don't think we should rule out the possibility that Caley can evolve and further improve in the job with an offseason of deep diving. I thought one of the more interesting things Caserio said in his presser was that it's the defensive staff that actually will do the deeper dive on the offense, right? Self-scouting. Break down our offense. Where are our weaknesses? What would you attack? What tendencies do you pick up? Where do we flat out stink and maybe don't acknowledge it because it's too close to in front of our face? And the offensive staff will do the same for the defense. Well, the offensive staff has an easy job. Man, they're a lot better than our side of the ball. Look, in many walks of life, how do you get experience until someone gives you the chance to get experience? However, and it's not as if this wasn't discussed at the point of hire, just because you're a branch of the Sean McVay tree doesn't mean you're going to be a thick, well-formed trunk from the start. And it was a first guessable hire at the time, and certainly at this point, a very second guessable hire to go with a second consecutive offensive coordinator, play caller, who'd never done it before. Slowick, fine. Year one of D'Amico, you're starting to build a program. We're all going to learn and grow into this together. But when you were hoping to make the leap in season three, to go from someone who had been a novice to another newbie in that role, it's fair to question. Of course, Casario used the word expect in terms of Kelly being back. That's wiggle room if they decide to make a change. We know this much already. Mike McDaniel's off the table as he goes to the Chargers, removing himself from head coaching consideration. I don't know if he'd have gotten the Browns job, but interesting to me. Look, McDaniel's very well regarded as a play caller, as the overall leader of men head coach. Well, some are meant to be colonels, not generals. I don't know where he falls there. But Jim Harbaugh is known as the hard-nosed, tough guy. We want to run the ball. McDaniel's finesse, pass game, play calling. Harbaugh aggressively fires Greg Roman and goes out and hires McDaniel, who I'm sure we're going to find out is as highly paid a coordinator as there is in the league. Nick Kelly certainly is not.
Josh, going back to your point about getting too cute, remember the C.J. Stroud rushing touchdown in the Colts game? That was a missed handoff to Togiai. Like, how many times does that need to fail before we take that out of the playbook? I don't know, but we'll keep it on the offense. My favorite tweet following the presser was from Ian Rappaport. He quote tweeted Casario's comments with a caption of, quote, an explanation of why Joe Mixon did not play this season. And the tweet just said, Nick Casario said Joe Mixon had a medical condition that never improved. He didn't jump off a building. He wasn't doing anything irresponsible. It was a freak thing. To which the first commenter replied, this is literally not an explanation. This is not the most odd handling of an injury situation we've ever seen with a Texans player between the secrecy, the vagary. I understand medical privacy. I totally get that. But also, this is a football team, and you would expect a little bit more transparency. What do you think about how this has been handled, the continued secrecy of this? And if you had to handicap it, what percentage chance of him playing a down next season do you think he has?
Well, let's take a shot at this. You'd almost think Joe Mixon played for the Astros with the subterfuge and we know nothing, or at least we're not going to say anything about what actually happened to Joe Mixon. I want to leave that little never say never space. 99% chance Joe Mixon's finished, absolutely, as a Houston Texan. Who knows if he plays in the NFL again after missing an entire year, and Casario saying, well, we'll have to see and evaluate because, among other things, where's Waldo been? He hadn't been around at all. But the reality is the Texans released Joe Mixon. They save $8 million in cap space. There's no way in hell you're bringing back Joe Mixon on a $10 million salary in 2026. Thought they eat $2 million, they will recoup $8 million. And the Texans at this point aren't in great salary cap shape. And this is before you get to Stroud, Will Anderson extensions coming in the next year or so, presumptively anyway. So Joe Mixon, at least on the field, was a one and done Houston Texan.
Yeah, I'd be looking at Breece Hall or drafting somebody with your first pick. I think it's number 28 overall. You could usually get a good running back there. And you're better off getting the young guy that's cheaper. I'd rather go that route. And I don't mind spending a high pick because this team desperately needs a playmaking running back. CJ was much better with Joe Mixon. I don't think anybody would argue that. So he's going to be 30 in July. We know what that number is for running backs. Had ankle injuries last year that some he played through. He also missed some games, and we don't even really know what the injury is. I think maybe lower body, if we're guessing, is all we can really be sure about. So it just makes no sense that he's nowhere around, nowhere to be found, and nobody will talk about it. But with Tank Dell, they'll talk all about Tank, and you'll see him all the time. But Joe Mixon, it's like he vanished from the face of the earth.
Charlie, you made the Astros comparison. Sarah was asked about the looming realities of the high cost of the core players that they're going to have to eventually dole out contracts to, or someone will, maybe not them, but I think it was Jerome Solomon asked him if he had a sense of what this team's competitive window was with this core group. And he went full Jim Crane. He said, in our book, the window is always open. So, okay. Josh, you brought up Tank Dell. I want to dig into the Tank Dell stuff, but Charlie, tell us who the experts are on digging with heavy machinery. I think I know the answer.
Yeah, let's follow with a message for Alvin Equipment. Dependable quality, I mentioned earlier. Third generation, family-owned business since 1952. Another long-established brand of quality, Kubota. And Alvin Equipment is the oldest Kubota dealer on the Texas Gulf Coast. So if you have a need or know someone who does, tractor, zero-turn mower, compact track loader, excavator, if it's a Kubota, Alvin Equipment has it in stock. Low interest rate financing available as well. They also have full service department, full parts department. They're right on Highway 6. You can call 281-331-3177. 281-331-3177. Online, alvinequipment.com. And working, you heard about them on Texans on Tap.
So Casario, he said that if they didn't do anything with the wide receivers, it's a good room as it's constructed. You know, he pointed to Nico, Higgins, Hutch, Noel, Dell. He mentioned Kirk and Barrows are both free agents, but he says he feels confident with that group. I would take exception to some of that, but I do agree. You've got some core pieces in Nico and Higgins. I think that's a good place to start. But Tank's a question mark here. Like Casario said that Tank tried his best to make it back this year. It just didn't work out, but they anticipate that he'll be ready next season. What do you guys make of the comments about Dell? And I guess, how confident are you that a player that relies so heavily on speed being able to regain his form after such a catastrophic injury?
I'd be less concerned if it was just an ACL. And I don't want to trivialize ACL injuries, but all kinds of guys recover from them. Saquon Barkley quite prominently. But the damage was so extensive beyond just the ACL. You know, it blew the knee to smithereens. Separate from the fact that Tank Dell is just so tiny. I mean, he's been an injury waiting to happen. So you have to treat him as found money. I don't consider him at all to be a lock on the roster. I think they do have reason to be optimistic about the room. You'd like to see Nico be able to go from start to finish, but he's an elite number one wide receiver, second and third rounders in Higgins and Noel going into their second season, where the cliche anyway is you make your most growth from year one to year two. Noel presumably will get enhanced opportunity, presuming Christian Kirk is not back. And I guess you could do worse than Xavier Hutchinson as a fourth wide receiver.
I'm not very encouraged at all. I'm a huge Tank fan. There was nothing more fun than watching him and Nico on the field together when CJ was spinning it that rookie year. It was incredible. It was must-watch TV every Sunday. It's just when Tank did come back, he didn't quite look the same to me. And he's a guy that he relies on quickness and suddenness, not just speed. And that stuff getting out of your brakes and that stuff doesn't come back always when you're suffering. And then keep in mind too, not just the ACL and the dislocated kneecap, that's the third major leg injury. He was also shot in the leg and then he had his leg broken trying to block. So he's barely been in the league for a few years and he's already had three really big leg injuries. So you can't feel very good about that. I'm sorry. And I like Jalen Noel, but it doesn't feel like he's as shifty as Tank. I think he's got better deep speed, just straight up speed. And he did run a faster 40 than Tank at the combine. So it's hard to count on Tank, man, as much as I want to see him out there. How can you? And if you listen closely to Nick Caserio's comments about Tank, it's all about, oh, we're excited and he's working so hard, but we really won't know what it looks like until he's out there on the grass running when camp comes around. And he's right. Until you see him out there moving like he used to, it's going to be hard to believe that that's the case. And I hate to say that. I wish him all the best and I'd love to see him have a full recovery. It's just, you have to think the odds are against it at this point.
Well, we blew through this. We've got so much more to talk about, but we're just out of time for this episode. But the good news is, if you're a viewer or listener of Texans on Tap and you want some more, our plan is to be dropping weekly episodes leading up to free agency. So make sure you subscribe to the channel. Thanks to our sponsor, Alvin Equipment. One last reminder, hit like on the video. And if you haven't already and you're listening on podcast, give us a 5-star rating while you're here. For Charlie and Josh, I'm Brandon saying so long. We'll see you next week. Go Texans.